It's time for Wise Money with Corhorn Financial Group with financial advisors Kevin Corhorn, Mike Bernard, and Josh Gregory.
Welcome to another episode of the Wise Money Show with Corhorn Financial Group, where every week we're helping you take your next wise step in your financial life. Thanks for being here, friends. My name is Mike Bernard. I'm your host. I'm also one of the certified financial planners on the program. And with me in the KFG studios, my business partners and fellow CFPs, Kevin Corhorn and Josh Gregory.
If you anticipate receiving an inheritance, should it influence your financial plan, or is it best to ignore it until it happens? And we're going to answer that question and break down the way an inheritance can impact your financial planning, all that and more on this episode of the Wise Money Show.
Okay, so nothing, we don't script anything here. And so what happens is I usually lay out, hey, here's the topic, here's the path we're going to take. And I share it with Josh and Kevin. And Kevin was so excited to talk about the how you treat an inheritance, and then even expanded the thinking, and so just started sharing stories with you. We're going to do that and help you wherever you're at with this issue, possibly receiving an inheritance, maybe not. What size? How do you plan? We're going to help you with that right now. If you have a question for the program, we would love to hear from you. You can call or text us, 574-222-2000. That's 574-222-2000. Online, wisemoneyshow.com is where you can find us. And you can leave questions there as well. We appreciate it. Speaking of, this entire topic inspired by a great question from fan of the show, Kevin, not Kevin Corhorn. And so, Kevin, if you're listening, I know we reached back out to you. Fabulous question. Very long. You can understand. I'm not going to read it word for word. But initially said, hey, thank you very much. Been enjoying the content on YouTube for the past several months. And you guys have taught me a lot. All right. So got a few different scenarios for an inheritance. And essentially scenario one is one side of the family as not likely to leave an inheritance, so we can skip that one. Scenario two is where he's saying his dad has passed away, mom is still living, he's executive of her estate and has kind of a view of things. And she's got what he was calling a normal financial situation. So mostly IRAs, annuity, a little after tax money, and but not going to make an enormous impact on his financial plan, treating this as bonus. And he's wanting to confirm, is that correct? Or should I actually start planning for some of this now? That's scenario two. Scenario three is he shares that he's got an aunt and uncle who have no kids, who helped raise him when he was young, and he was just asked to be the executor of their estate, and also in that process found out that he was or is the primary beneficiary of what he's found out is an ultra high net worth estate. And he said it's at a level that it doesn't seem like he can treat this as a bonus or ignore it. How do you plan for it? And then a bonus question, when talking to CFPs, how much of this do you divulge, so that you can make sure things are treated appropriately and that they're not getting their interest ahead of yours. So lots to hit and unpack there. And we've got a certain path we're going to take it. Probably a bad one, but we're going to answer a lot of questions and issues related to it. So guys, I just want to start high level, or even rule of thumb, or just at a basic level, how should you plan for an inheritance? Are there any generalities or rules of thumb or examples? Kevin, I know you started sharing examples of, oh no, here's how you should just normally think about an inheritance in your financial plan.
Well, I typically let the very thoughtful Joshua Gregory go first, but if you're throwing the ball to me, Mike, I'll take it. I think when we look at an inheritance, the question is it a blessing or a curse? Mm-hmm. And there can be a foundation that can be laid that can allow it to be a blessing, but it, in working with folks that have generational wealth, there can be down the line, you could have a family member that says, everything that I have was given to me, I didn't earn any of it. And depending if you are, I don't know if it matters if you're a man or a woman, but I met with men this week that were kind of undone by this idea that the kind of the founder, the generation one, created all this incredible wealth, and now at generation three, they're trying to somehow prove their worth and prove that they're capable and all of these things. And it made me think that it is way harder to be given a huge chunk of money than it is to earn a huge chunk of money. 'Cause as you're earning, you are learning along the way. And so there are a lot of lessons that you get that you wouldn't get if the money was given to you. So and when you say that out loud, everyone says, "Oh well, if it's so hard to be given money, like, well, I'll just why don't we try it out?"
That's right.
And
let's test your theory.
Yeah, I'd like to see. But I mean, you don't have to look that far to see, especially sudden wealth. Think of the lottery.
Yeah.
I mean, these folks die, and how do they die? They die from addiction or other things, but a lot of them die broke.
Mm-hmm. A parallel here, I'm thinking of this quote. I'm not sure who said it, but early success builds ego. Lengthy success or delayed success builds character. And I would say the same thing applies for, you know, financial progress. Fast financial progress or wealth builds ego,
but there is overconfidence,
and there isn't that foundational character versus, you know, brick by brick, and over time earning it yourself often does build character.
Yeah, I bet all three of us have had examples. We've seen clients where, you know, we get to peer into their life. We get to see the decisions they've made up to this point, and then walk with them as they're making new decisions. And we've probably all seen examples where when someone knows that an inheritance is coming and it starts to impact their decisions today, in the sense of it actually weakens some of their habits. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they don't need to save as much. Maybe they can spend 120% of what they earn because they're just kind of drawing down what they have accumulated, believing it's going to be replenished by, you know, some pot of gold at the end of someone else's rainbow here. And the scary thing is, and the warning that I tend to give is, you don't know really if that inheritance is coming.
Yep.
Unless, you know, literally the person has passed away already and you've heard from the attorney that we're going to settle the estate and now it's coming, right? That's not a long lead up time, and hopefully that's not impacting your behavior. But if you anticipate, you just kind of have a sense that your parents or grandparents or someone in your life has more money than they're going to need, and you just anticipate or you assume that it's coming to you, man, that really can start messing with your behavior if you're not careful. And so my default is typically to tell clients, hey, let's not count on this. I'm glad that you're sharing it. We can model in your retirement projection and things like that what kind of impact it could have positively or negatively. But let's not count on it. Let's do what it takes for you to reach your goals on your own and pretend it's not there. But then there's plenty of times when I violate my own recommendation and say, hey, actually, there's some work we need to do here.
So I would say, as a general rule, treat it as bonus. Do not plan for it. Do not plan for it. Now, in the situations like Josh, where you're mentioning, and we'll get to scenario number three, where it's so big you can't really ignore it. But I guess the reason why the default would be don't plan on it is we could share stories for the next hour of folks that came in and said, I'm going to receive this inheritance, and it never happened. It never materialized because the wealth was in a small business that went bankrupt, or the wealth ended up needing to be spent through for nursing home, or the wealth went to a different family member. Right. I mean, we've seen it all. Yeah. We have seen it all. And therefore, treating it as bonus is probably best. And yet, in many situations, I would argue that an awareness is helpful. Because when you're looking at, well, should I contribute pre-tax or Roth, or should I do a Roth conversion or roll? What easy for me to say. Yeah. What role should these tax shelters play? Having an awareness that, okay, there could be an inheritance and there could be some tax issues that are thrown in our lap. That's helpful. But as a rule of thumb, I would treat it as bonus. Now, what about scenario? So we're going to get into it. So scenario number two, well, how should you plan and when? And then scenario number three, right? We would all love this blessing to ultimately find out that that we're the beneficiaries of a significant inheritance. And if so, do you plan and how? So we're going to hit all of that and how it's going to impact all six areas of your financial life. So that and more coming up on The Wise Money Show with Corhorn Financial Group.
This is Wise Money with Corhorn Financial Group.
How do you plan for an inheritance? Should you plan for an inheritance, or is it just sort of bonus, treated as cream of the crop? Well, we're helping with that right now. This is the Wise Money Show with Corhorn Financial Group. Thanks for being here. My name is Mike Bernard. With me in the KFG studios, Kevin Corhorn and Josh Gregory. Stay up to date on all Wise Money content. Find us online, wisemoneyshow.com. Then all over social media, wherever you're at, we are there as well. Search the Wise Money Show. Talking about how you plan for an inheritance. Great question from fan of the show, Kevin. Multiple scenarios. We're going to get into them in just here in a second. But in general, I think it's wise to not make an expected inheritance part of your plan too soon. Treat it as bonus. And that would be the general, but you can't run your life on rules of thumb. And then I would add to that, if you're young or the potential the owners of the wealth are young, don't plan for it. Don't plan on it. I just wouldn't. If the expected inheritance is significant, is large, and as you age, yeah, you need to start planning for it. And I don't know, that's not specific enough, and that's why we're going to get into the scenarios. But that's what I would add, a little bit of texture to that, those rules of thumb or generalities.
Yeah, and I would make a distinction, and this may sound a little bit like splitting hairs, but I'm going to say make the distinction between planning for an inheritance. So planning for an inheritance in the context of a financial plan means, okay, I'm assuming that I'm going to get several million dollars, so therefore I won't save into my 401k today. That's planning. And I would make a difference between planning and preparing. Mm-hmm. Preparing is developing skill and character so that no matter what happens, you are ready for it. And so I would say you should always be preparing. I remember when I had little kids and I had spent my life was a little bit out of balance. I'd spent more time working and less time working out. And so Joshua and I ran a few marathons in order to get in shape, because I thought, okay, if I had to run after my children, or if I had to jump in a lake and swim a quarter of a mile to save them, I need to be in shape. I need to be ready for that event in case it ever happens. And I would be thinking along those lines for if there's any potential at all that someday you might receive some money that you didn't earn, I would be preparing with the skill. Because the other thing is, the people that have that money, they're watching you. Mm. And so you want to I would say be discreet, but you want to be able to show that you have your financial life in order, that you've got skill and you've got character, because it takes both of those.
I'm so glad that you point out that, you know, the older generation that may be leaving something behind, they are paying attention to the actions and the behaviors, the choices of those that might receive the money.
Oh, yes.
And because, you know, if they love you dearly, they're not going to leave money to you in a way that hurts you, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Right. But man, because we've had opportunities to serve multiple generations within one family, you get to talk to that parent generation and their kids, maybe even their grandkids. And man, sometimes it's very eye-opening to see the difference in opinion or philosophy on the whole inheritance between the generations. One might say, you know what, I didn't inherit anything, and I actually don't really care too much to leave a big inheritance to my kids. Like, I actually want it to go to charity. Or no, we're going to have a ton of fun. We're going to spend these dollars and maybe some of it with the kids as well during our lifetime. But boy, wouldn't it be great if we could spend our last dollar on our last day. Meanwhile, if those kids are thinking, yeah, my parents have so much money, I probably don't need to work too hard at getting my own act together, right?
Oh, this is, so Mike asked for a story, and I'm thinking of some friends, and they had sold a business. And so they had some money. They had a liquidity event. They had some money. And they were, he was walking on the beach with one of his sons. And he said, so how, you know, the money, the subject of money came up, and the dad kind of got around to, well, how much money do you think we have? And the son said, oh, 100 million. And it was about 5% of that number. And so it is funny because you think about this, and kids have no idea, but they can look and they can say, oh, well, we've got money because we live in a nice house and drive a nice car and get to do these things. Therefore, there must be some sort of money tree out in the backyard. And whenever mom and dad need it, they just go and...
I had this conversation with middle child this week. He said, I know you say money doesn't grow on trees, but money's paper, Dad. And I'm pretty sure that comes from a tree. So anyway, I think we uncovered something. So there's a difference between planning for an inheritance and preparing mm-hmm. for an inheritance. Preparing is the deep work, mm-hmm. and it's the skills, and it's the character building, it's the discipline, it's the responsibility. That's the preparing. And so I would self-assess. You're probably going to self-assess really good, or maybe feel regret. And listen, we all have made financial mistakes, so ignore the regret, but do an honest assessment. How can I develop more skill and character and responsibility? So that's preparing. Kevin's example for planning, I would actually put in a different category. So I'm going to add a third, expecting an inheritance. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the danger lies. Mm-hmm. Because when you expect an inheritance, especially too young, and Kevin's example was, so I'm not going to save in my 401k because I'm taken care of. No. I would argue that's not planning. That could be tomfoolery. Like, that's expecting an inheritance.
That is planning. I mean, that is a way of planning. It's a horrible plan.
I would.
And so I'm not recommending that, but I'm saying, so maybe that is expecting.
So distinction, again, maybe mincing, like splitting hairs, like Kevin said, but expecting an inheritance versus planning mm-hmm. financially versus preparing. Let's go to the planning piece. And we're going to come back to the question. And we Kevin, fan of the show, didn't share any details here, but just said in scenario two with, dad passed away, but with mom, she's older, he's the executor, she's got an IRA, she's got an annuity, she's got some after-tax money, and he's treating this as bonus. He's not relying on this in order to retire or make big financial decisions, but there will be some inheritance there, and he said likely it's going to cause him to pay tax in the 24% tax bracket. Mm-hmm. So guys, what are some planning considerations in a quote-unquote normal type of inheritance? And I mean, my guess, I don't know, normal is somewhere between 100,000 and maybe 400,000 of retirement type dollars.
Well, what I would do is say, what is the game and what are the rules? There's a game that we're playing, and here's the game. This $500,000 that mom has in her IRA has never had any taxes paid on it. So you have mom, and then you have Kevin. Did Kevin say siblings, or is it just him?
Two siblings.
So there's three. So the question is, who's going to pay what in taxes on this IRA money? Because we know if mom doesn't spend any, she says, oh, I'm living on, I can't spend all my Social Security money. Mm-hmm. That money is going to grow, except for the required minimum distributions that come out, but those can be reinvested if she wants. So if that money is growing, net growing, the question is, should mom pay taxes or should the siblings pay taxes?
That was the first thing that came to mind, mm-hmm. Kevin mm-hmm. and Kevin. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I saw that, and we don't know your siblings' situation, but you paying tax in 24% tax bracket, my question went to, well, is mom in the 24% tax bracket? Now, she's a widow, so she's single. So there's not those tax brackets aren't very big.
No.
But...
And if you take out enough from that IRA, you lump your Social Security on top of it, so you can quickly mm-hmm. scoot through the brackets as a single.
And you don't want to trigger Irma, and so on. But I wonder if there's some multi-generational tax plan. Is mom doing tax planning?
Exactly. And the fact that Kevin has a view into her financial life, because he's the executor of the estate, he's helping her manage her finances, now all of a sudden they can take that multi-generational approach where you're figuring out, hey, for mom's benefit, what's the best option or best choice on tax picture, on investments, that sort of thing. But then also taking into consideration, maybe some of this money is not going to stay in mom's hands or she's not going to use it. And so let's work in the plan B. How does it benefit the beneficiaries as well?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We're just starting to scratch the surface here on both this scenario, but then the big one, which is ultra high net worth inheritance coming. How do you plan for that? We've got that and more coming up on the Wise Money Show with Corehorn Financial Group.
This is Wise Money with Corehorn Financial Group.
When you expect to receive an inheritance of pre-tax dollars, some IRA money from mom and dad, and they're later in their life, does that mean you need to start making changes to your financial planning? Well, we're helping with that right now. This is the Wise Money Show with Corehorn Financial Group. Thanks for being here. My name is Mike Bernard. With me in the KFG studios, Kevin Corehorn and Josh Gregory. Every episode of the Wise Money Show is on podcast. Wherever you listen, go check it out. Rate the program there as well. So wherever you listen to podcasts, search Wise Money Show and subscribe there and rate the program. We appreciate it. Tackling a large question from a fan of the show, Kevin, about how to treat different inheritances and just working our way through it. And in his scenario number two, expecting to receive what he's calling an average typical inheritance from mom. And we're presuming, and he stated, you know, this IRA and then there's annuity, which would be, you know, potentially taxable. Don't know the tax basis or whatever. We could get into that. But what, how do you plan for this? Number one, treat it as bonus. If this is, well, don't know how long mom's going to live. She could actually spend the last few years of her life in a nursing home. A lot of these resources could be depleted. Therefore, you know, in a quote unquote normal type of inheritance situation, don't plan for it, treat it as bonus. But have an awareness. Mm-hmm. And we first talked about, well, mom needs to be doing tax planning. Mm-hmm. The second thing is an IRA right now, inheriting a pre-tax account from someone that's not your spouse is going to fall under the 10-year rules. And the IRS has come out with the ruling, but they've delayed the implementation until next year, 1/1/25, where if that individual was already taking their required minimum distributions, then when you inherit their pre-tax account, you have to take a required minimum distribution as well. It's going to start next year, 2025, mm-hmm. but also have the account completely emptied within 10 years after the date of death. Therefore, I would look and say, you know, Kevin, if you have a HSA eligible high deductible health plan, I would max that thing out. I would max that thing out, number one. Number two, I would do a multi-year tax projection and lay out, well, without an inheritance, what tax bracket do you think that you're in at, you know, over the next 7 to 10 years? Mm-hmm. And then how might an inheritance influence that? And I would have that be the guide to determine whether you should be doing any Roth funding for your 401k instead of pre-tax or doing any Roth conversions in that.
Correct. Either Roth conversions in your own financial life or in mom's life.
Right.
Right. Because you have influence and you're helping to manage mom's finances and everything, you need to be considering whether or not a Roth conversion during her lifetime can make some sense. And the only way to really figure that out is for you to do a tax projection, her to do a tax projection. Let's compare over the coming years, depending on how long mom lives, what years are the best years to pay the tax? Mm-hmm. Whose tax return is the best place to pay those taxes as well? You know, I would have the pleasure to serve a family where I'm serving the oldest generation and the kids in the second generation, some of the third generation even as well. But the oldest generation, man, she had, her health was failing. And it looked like she was going to pass away like any time. And we hurried up. We did some tax planning and we ended up doing some Roth conversions. And it was simply because she could pay at a lower rate than what any of the rest of the family would end up paying at, mm-hmm. if they inherit these dollars as extra. And as Murphy's Law would have it, that bought her many more years. She rebounded quickly and is doing well still. So.
Well, I had a similar situation where where we did a Roth conversion and individual passed within a month. And so, yeah, you don't, number one, you don't know. Early in my career, Kevin said, you know, we do planning, and that is planning with confidence and having certainty in an uncertain world where there's an uncertain future. If we knew the exact date someone was going to die, you'd be able to build the perfect plan. We don't. And so planning.
And I'm a little bit surprised that we jumped right into kind of the specific solutions. Because I would tell Kevin, first of all, you know, I think Kevin, the name Kevin means handsome.
Ah.
I don't.
For some.
That's ironic.
It's an Irish name, I think. Anyways, so, but I would tell Kevin, hey, get a coach.
Yeah.
Get someone to walk this path with you, because it might, you say, well, fund an HSA if it's available. What if it's not available? Then then what do I do? What's my next wise step? And so I just want to, I would say, Kevin, don't go this path alone. You want to work with people. That's what I tell folks. If you knew everything that I knew, you should be sitting next to me, and we should both be financial
planners.
Let's go. Right. Because we spend, 45 to 50 hours a week helping people navigate through this complex maze of their financial life. And there's complexity not only in Kevin's life, but in the extended life through his mother's situation. And I would have him preparing and planning and not expecting.
Yeah, you're right. Now, that was a bonus question of his, is how do you approach a CFP when you've got these potentially, big issues. And so we'll come back to that. But you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. I'm going to add one more thing before we get to the ultra high net worth. Mm-hmm. And that is how this quote unquote normal potential inheritance could influence your plan, your investment strategies. Mm-hmm. If you're looking and saying, well, mom's, late 80s and her, she might live another decade. She might live another 10 months. We don't know. But regardless, I'm going to be working for the foreseeable future. If you're planning on working and then there's an inheritance that you're going to be forced to take within 10 years, that might push the time horizon for your own investments out even further. And while I just had this question yesterday from someone that was in their 80s, where they were very conservative, but they love the markets. And so they said, well, is now, should we take some of our conservative money and put it in the markets? Okay. If your time horizon's really short, if your perspective's really short, you've got to look at valuations and a few other things. But for the rest of us, you don't need to worry about valuations when, it's always a good time to invest, right? If you're looking out 10 years, 15 years, 20 years until you'll need the money, there's never been a time in 20 years where the stock market has been lower. So I would look and say, well, does this influence your investment strategy? And would argue that it would.
We've helped enough of that older generation before. And often, generationally, they'll say, I want all my money in the most conservative stuff that you can find. I'm a CD investor. I'm a fixed annuity investor. I don't want anything in the market, that kind of thing. And maybe that can make sense on its face value if, someone's in their 80s and they're spending down this money. To have it liquid, to have it available, not fluctuating, can make sense during their lifetime. But if it was pretty evident at some point that some of this money really is extra and it's going to people who are going to use it 10, 15, 20 years down the road, it's going to become part of someone else's retirement nest egg, so to speak. Sometimes that can give you enough reason or enough confidence to say, well, these extra dollars that I'm probably not going to spend, maybe they should be a little bit more growth oriented as well.
So you're saying not just Kevin's investment portfolio, but even looking at mom's investment strategy as
possibly.
Well.
Possibly, for a small
agree.
Portion.
Yeah, Kevin and I remember this one of the first cases when I was starting 20 some years ago, and Kevin and I were working with originally, the similar story that you shared, Josh. Originally, we were meeting with dad, and then we eventually started meeting with the kids as well, started working with the kids as well. Now we're working with their kids, which is just fun. Gosh, yeah, what a blessing. Mm-hmm. What a blessing. Mm-hmm. The fun stuff that we get to do and plan for. And yeah, Dad was at a situation where he was not really living off of any of the money. And it was about $1 million. And as a young financial advisor, I was thinking, okay, well, Dad's, you know, needs to be conservative. And Kevin said, no, what's the time horizon for this money? And the kids and Dad were like, well, gosh, yeah, we don't see when we would touch it. And he said, well, if you're going to invest based on the time horizon, these dollars should be very aggressive. Now, what if something happens? Where would, you know, where's the pressure release? Okay, well, let's treat this account, this one account, as, all right, if something happens, we need to get our hands on money, or he needed to move or whatever, we'll have that be low risk. Mm-hmm. But these other two accounts should be high risk. And I'm going to say, looking back on this, probably 18 years ago, that was a six-figure difference. That made a mm-hmm. six-figure difference mm-hmm. in their family tree mm-hmm. financially. So big deal, big, big, big deal. But you need planning. You need comprehensive financial planning. So, all right, we've got more coming up on the Wise Money Show with Corhorn Financial Group.
This is Wise Money with Corhorn Financial Group.
Thanks for being here. This is the Wise Money Show with Corhorn Financial Group. My name is Mike Bernard. Here with me in the KFG studios, Kevin Corhorn and Josh Gregory. Every episode of the Wise Money Show, as well as a lot of other content, is on the YouTube channel. Go check it out. Go to YouTube, search the Wise Money Show. Well over 1,000 videos. Odds are, if you have faced a financial question, financial situation, we've made content about it, and not just content, blah, 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 talking about it, but hey, how does that issue connect with all six areas of your financial life so that you can make a wise choice? So go to YouTube, search the Wise Money Show, and subscribe there. All right, we're talking about how you plan for an inheritance. And we haven't yet touched on probably the one that was most exciting to all of you when you heard about the question. And that is, this individual found out that recently that he's now the executor of his aunt and uncle's estate. Aunt and uncle were not able to have kids, so no kids, and they treated him like a son, helped raise him. Found out that he's the executor and the primary beneficiary of what he's labeling an ultra high net worth estate. One where he said, I would normally treat an inheritance as a bonus, not plan for it. I don't think I can ignore this one. It's that big. Hmm. We've already talked about the rules of thumb. And that, listen, you know, we've seen where, I'm going to get this big inheritance 30 years from now. And over that time, that inheritance gets either bankrupt, gets spent through, gets diverted to other places. But in this scenario, seems like, no, aunt, uncle, like this, it's nearer term. How do you plan for this? Do you start incorporating this into your planning? I don't see how you can.
Well, so, you know, it's interesting. How would you define ultra high net worth?
Mm-hmm.
And I think for most folks, it's someone who's got a lot more money than I do. so it just depends on where you are on the scale. But I think in terms of, hey, I'm going to have a federal estate tax issue. So think in terms of north of $28 million. And if you're going to be at a point where you're north of $28 million, because if it's just the example we were talking about earlier, where it's, you know, mom's got a $500,000 or $1 million and three kids, well, mom can start making gifts of $18,000 a year and not have any federal estate tax issues. But once you go north of $28 million, when you say ultra high net worth, Kevin, I'm thinking there's federal estate tax involved. Mm-hmm. So anything that gets inherited north of that is going to be, just to keep it simple, just think anything north of $28 million is going to get cut in half. It's not perfect, but it's close, and we try not to do math on the radio. But then now all of a sudden you say, well, wait a minute, what do we do? Well, you say, hey, we'll get aunt and uncle to start doing gifts. Okay, aunt and uncle give you 18 and 18, so they give you $36,000, Kevin. That's not a rounding error on a rounding error.
Yeah.
That doesn't do anything to limit the growth of that $28 million.
Mm-hmm.
Plus. So this is where you say, well, what do I know about that? If I'm talking to an advisor, here's the thing, because his question was, I need to find an advisor that could help me with this.
Yeah.
And how do I do it? I would start interviewing folks, but I would start working with one right away. And you might, here's what I would tell you, Kevin. You might find someone who is a core values fit, but they might not have experience. They might not know what an intentionally defective grantor trust is, or what a SLAT is, or these other things that is just part of the vernacular for someone who deals with high net worth folks and has to deal with estate planning issues. Mm-hmm. So then I would talk to them, because you might find a talented young financial advisor who you say, I like this person enough, I'm going to tell them what's coming, and that person can go and get equipped to be able to deal with that eventuality. But I would also try as soon as possible to get my Kevin's advisor working with aunt and uncle's advisor and have them collaborate, because it might make sense to do some generation skipping and do a generation skipping transfer trust. I don't know if Kevin has kids. Like, there's all kinds of possibilities, and it's almost like trying on clothes, and you say, well, do I like this? Is it my color? Does it make my legs look big? Or, you know, is it my style? I don't know.
Right.
But so you need to know of all these options, because there's a ton of options and a ton of creativity, because the reality is people that are sophisticated enough to make that kind of money and have that kind of money typically are sophisticated enough to avoid paying significant taxes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you were hinting at some of the strategies that exist out there that maybe they need to have on their radar. But the thing I don't want people to miss is the fact that your advisor that you select in that situation, mm-hmm. you may not just be selecting a CFP. There's a whole network of other professionals that they collaborate with within,
yes.
you know, their circle. It's like, who's on the team with the financial advisor? And this is where not all estate planning attorneys are created equal either. You know, some right. have significantly Absolutely. Better tools in their toolbox than those that, you know, handle the simple will or a power mm-hmm. of attorney for the average Joe down the street. And so to me, you're interviewing your certified financial planner, but who's in their network from a tax planning standpoint, from an estate planning standpoint? What kind of options and familiarity do they have with the investment world and all of that? So very much this is all about comprehensive financial planning, but you start getting into selection of your team. And that's where the right strategies will bubble up to the surface, like Kevin was referring to.
Yeah, I also, so fantastic. I completely agree. I would also add, be careful to go back to what we started the show with. Be careful about now that, you know, I'm expecting this and it's going to change my behavior, or it's going to influence my character or how I view money. Now, it sounds like, Kevin, you've got the discipline and the responsibility, some of the skill set, and I would not lose that. I would mm-hmm. not lose that with the awareness now of this money. And then I would even, you know, as you're looking for your CFP, and we'll come back to that and talk about, well, what should you be looking for? Some of the planning pieces that applied in scenario two, I would say also apply in this scenario. Your own tax shelter strategy likely is significantly important. Right, trying to get as much money tax sheltered for you as possible is likely a great idea,
and maybe the generation behind you as well. You know, some of the families that have left the largest money behind to the next generation, man, they get really good at filling up other generations' buckets. You know, the mm-hmm. the kids, the grandkids are maxing out Roth IRAs and using 529 plans and taking advantage of HSAs and things like that. Because the more of this money that you can get out of the reach of Uncle Sam, the better everybody's going to be mm-hmm. in the end.
Yep. I wonder, you know, I'm not sure if you shared your age. I have no idea how close you are to making a Social Security decision. I would mm-hmm. delay that decision.
Yep.
Right. I would push that decision off as long as possible. And now, again, that's going to sound like advice. That's not advice. It's just like something I want to plant that idea in your head. You need to get the direct advice from your CFP.
Yeah. So that CFP we're back to Kevin's looking for a CFP. This is what you're looking for. You're looking for a CFP with a sufficient experience, and but I would also look for a CFP that's part of a team that has a deep bench. Mm-hmm. So if you're Kevin, I would say if you're in your 50s or 60s, you probably want to work with someone who's considerably younger than you,
but with experience. Right. So it's going to be. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Someone who's younger than you that's seen. I mean, this is the my favorite part about what I'm doing is I've been doing this for 30 years. It took me 20 some years to be able to work with the types of clients that need the strategies that I studied, you know, many years earlier. Mm-hmm. Well, the guys that are starting today and in the CFP courses, they're getting to see the ultra high net worth. How do we plan for federal estate tax? These types of things that they're studying right now.
Yeah. 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 So team, I would also say multidisciplinary, like Josh mentioned. So having that network to CPAs and to estate planning. And then if they don't do, like we say every single show, regardless of the content of the show and topic, they've got to be a CFP and they've got to be doing comprehensive financial planning, looking at all six areas of your financial life to see exactly what strategies float to the surface and what wisdom would do. So, all right. That's all the time we have for today. On behalf of Josh Gregory, Kevin Corhorn, all of us at KFG, have a great weekend. We'll see you next Saturday for the Wise Money Show with Corhorn Financial Group.
Rut-row.
Rut-row.
Oh, that's funny. You want to know something really funny? So Easton Kindergarten, he gets these little Scooby snacks like that he'll put in his lunchbox. And I definitely ate some last night. The last thing that I ate last night was some Scooby snacks.
Securities offered through Silver Oak Securities, member FINRA/SIPC. Advisory services offered through KFG Wealth Management, LLC. Doing business as Corhorn Financial Group. KFG Wealth Management, LLC and Silver Oak Securities Incorporated companies are unaffiliated.